step inside here, you're in.
What kind of criminals get caught?
The dumb ones.
You're kidding me.
What's with all the cleaning? You've got like 7 cleans in here.
Failing to plan is planning to fail.
I know that, Jeff. It's just a little intense seeing it all written down like this.
We can't have bruises, no scuffs, no scratches.
What's going on here?
You're chatting to us today about Brother's Nest, which is coming out in cinemas next month.
My pleasure.
How's it all been so far? Like, you premiered at South by Southwest and...
Well, making the film has been an absolute pleasure. It was the most fun I've ever had as a filmmaker, and I've been making films since I was 7, so that's saying something. The release of the film was great because we did, you know, these things, it's interesting. Once the horse bolts and you've finished making the film, and everything sort of happens very quickly. So we suddenly found ourselves in Austin, Texas at the festival over there, South by Southwest. And we had 4 screenings, and which was great because that's Kenny good. Had been there 11 years earlier with 2 screenings, and we mostly got the midnight sessions the first time around. But this time around, we had really prime spots and full houses, and the crowd loved it. It was great. It was really great. But you know, the thing that we were hoping for, and we managed to get, which was great, is the American critics got it and loved it. And so we've come home with a whole lot of great quotes under our arm.
Well, that's it. Yeah, I've read a few of the reviews that came out of South by Southwest. They were really good. So obviously for the uninitiated who haven't watched the trailer or anything, can you just give us a quick short synopsis of what the film's about?
Yeah, absolutely. It's about two brothers that go to their family home to spend the day plotting the murder of a family member that they believe will rob them of their inheritance once their mother passes. She's got a terminal illness, and so that's the day is them rehearsing, and then what goes horribly wrong when you actually do decide to do the unspeakable.
Yep. So it's quite a dark film.
Yep.
But you've also peppered it with some laughs.
Yeah.
Some pretty decent laughs. How was it striking that balance between it? Because obviously you're behind the camera as well.
Well, look, I just. On the plane coming over here, just watched the film about, I think it's called Stalin is Dead. And it, you know, you don't get blacker than that.
No.
But very, very funny.
Oh,
and I think, you know, it's that old saying of, you know, tragedy plus time equals comedy, you know. And I often find that, you know, I remember I was driving home not that long ago, and there was a news report about a father that had convinced his son to burn down their family pizza shop for the insurance.
Yeah,
but the kid had made such a mess of it. I mean, he was in his early 20s. He managed to burn his thumb off. So you laughed.
Yeah.
See, you laughed. And when the fire brigade turned up in the morning, they found the thumb, and the kid gave his dad up in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Just, you know. Now, I heard that and laughed, but I knew inherently that everything about those that evening would have been horrific.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's the sort of humour, and it's also recognising oneself in it. So how you balance it, for me, it's about truth. It's about just making sure that you go for as much truth and honesty in performance, and that the situations are played in such a way that hopefully an audience may recognise themselves a little bit in it.
Yeah.
You know, obviously we push things to an extreme, but there are so many moments in the film where I think the average person can watch it and go, oh God, this is like being at a Christmas dinner with my brother and sister, you know, or you might know someone that's been through that sort of thing. So the balance came out of, I split the film into two halves, basically. The first half is really them plotting and talking about what they intend to do, and then the second half is about the repercussions of, you know, of whatever it is that they set in motion. And the way I sort of see that is you've kind of got the fantasy element, which is, when I say fantasy, it's all played very realistic, but I think criminals do find themselves in this sort of fantasy universe where they believe everything will just play out as they see. They must, because
well,
otherwise
they do,
why would they rob a bank if they didn't think they were going to get away with it?
Yep.
You know, and then of course the reality, something entirely different happens.
Yeah, for sure. And obviously, you're on screen with your brother, which has been... Well, you're on screen with him last now. Correct me if I'm wrong. Kenny was the last time you were on screen with him?
Well, actually, we did a web series called Morty Coots.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I had a couple of scenes with him in that. But, I think Kenny was the last time we did anything together. Yeah.
So what was it like? You used to... working together?
It was great. I was nervous. I'll be honest about that, because I am his older brother. Yeah. And, you know, we have gone through in our past lives that thing of, which has to happen with brothers when there's one that's older than the other, that you've got to sort of come to a point where that role that you've had as the older brother has to be sort of severed a little bit and let Shane be his own person. So in this case, you know, when we did Kenny, Shane didn't know a lot about filmmaking and he was all ears. Well, since then, he's worked with some of the greatest directors that we have in this country, and he's certainly got his chops up. So I thought, you know, is he going to really take direction from his brother? You know, well, the good news is, he not only did he do that, it was an absolute delight, and we sort of just got into a huddle together, and it was a joy.
Well, we definitely saw some more range from Shane in this film than what I think I've seen him do before.
Yeah.
So, well, that was great.
I said to Shane that I really wanted to push him hard. That, you know, like, I wanted him... Look, I know what Shane's capable of, because when I did Kenny with him, he won an AFI award for it. So I just said to him, look, I just want to take us both, actually both of us, to some really dark places and some uneasy places, because I know he's got it in him. You know, I think people, because Shane's such an adorable person and so much fun to be around, I suspect I'm just sort of hypothesizing here that maybe sometimes people are a little reluctant to push him too hard.
Yeah.
He's certainly not like he's going to break. The guy's, you know, the guy's unbreakable.
Yeah.
We've proven that recently with him snapping his Achilles tendon. He's still doing the tour. So
exactly
where
right.
Where most people would be laying up with their feet in the air. So.
Yeah, that's it. And another big part of the film is obviously the house. Is like a character in itself as well.
Yeah, I just want to apologise for the guy with the saw. He has followed me around for about the last 10 years. Every time I've done an interview, I think this guy has turned up and just pulled it. I don't think he's even a carpenter. I think he's just hanging out. Yeah, he's just one of those guys that just has a... he's just got this sort of battery-operated circular saw in his suitcase, and he just pulls it out and starts as soon as I start. I think my voice grates on him, so he just tries to drown me out. So I apologize. I don't know if you're hearing that on the thing, but it's pretty loud.
So obviously that the house in the film is like a character in itself.
Absolutely, yeah.
How did you go finding this location? Because I guarantee there's thousands of farmhouses out there.
There are, and I sent some poor bastard to most of them. And and that's the irony of all ironies was it was literally, quite literally, the very first house that was sent to me. So we got a location manager on board, and I told him the kind of thing I was looking for, and it really wasn't that house. The script was originally written to be shot at my own property. I live on 6 acres, and I've got a house that's pretty fairly, you know, modern. It's about 12 years old, just a farmhouse, weatherboard. But I quickly realised that was going to, you know, that was going to lose its interest for an audience pretty quickly. You know, you're watching two guys in orange suits through most of the film. You know, the house has to be a character. So anyway, when we found this particular place, it was riddled with all these radios and this car graveyard, and we immediately discounted it as being not really appropriate because we didn't have a budget to remove all that stuff. But I just kept going back to the photos of it. The more this poor bugger went from house to house to house, and I think he ended up looking at about 85 houses in the end, I just said, look, I think your first one was spot on. Let's write it into the script. Let's write the radios and the cars into the script. And then you've actually building production value into the story that's already there.
Yeah.
So that's what we did.
And obviously your distribution model on this film is quite different to the usual. I've dabbled a little bit in film funding and all that, so I know how painful it can be.
Yes, sir.
And most feature films take, 4 to 7 years minimum?
At minimum, and the average is 8 to 10.
Yeah, so to get off the ground. And you guys did a fairly quick turnaround on
16 months, I think.
So how's the whole process for you doing this sort of model?
Well, the truth of that is that the only way I was able to do it was to step out of the industry, so to speak.
Yeah.
So I've been in the industry since Kenny, trying to get another film up. And look, it's a long story, but you know, it's easy to get pigeonholed in any industry.
Oh yeah.
And I think in my case, I was just seen as the comedy guy, and I love genre, And I have a number of, all my scripts are quite varied and different.
Yep.
And it just, I think a lot of people had trouble seeing how that guy could do that script.
Yeah.
And just the simple reality of when you end up trying to make a film that's got a reasonable budget, and a lot of the films I was working on had budgets over $5 million, then, you know, you've got to convince more and more people that you're not a fool and that you will actually be able to make the film. And risk management is a big part of financing films in this country. And so I just got to a point where I went, you know what, I've got to make a film. I just have to make it. It's been too long and I'm just chomping at the bit. And development hell isn't just a phrase. No. I was in it.
Yeah.
And I had a good friend of mine who sadly passed away while we were making the film, was the one that sort of put, and he worked in the industry as a sound designer and worked on all my films. He just rang me up one day and said, just stop with all this other stuff. Stop asking permission. Go back to how you did Kenny. You just did that on off the oil of the smell of an oily rag. You've got your brother is now famous. Get him on board. And he basically just laid it all out for me. And so we originally attacked the whole idea is doing it as a low budget film for about $200,000. Shane and beautifully offered to work for next to nothing.
Yep.
If it was done for about $200,000, and we're going to shoot it at my house.
Yeah.
But as often is the case, when you commit to something, the universe starts to conspire to help you. And I thought about all what was positive about the experience of releasing Kenny, and so much of why Kenny did really well was the relationship with regional and independent cinemas.
Yep.
And I thought, well, it's going to be a low budget film. I'm not going to be able to get the majors interested. I'm going to have to go to these smaller. So I'll develop a relationship with them, get them on board early on.
Yeah.
And tailor as much of the marketing to their needs as possible, and see if that works. And look, it was a gamble, but they went with it. And then suddenly the film grew legs, and, you know, it was no longer, you know, some sort of small little indie film. It grew, and I think everyone's going to benefit from it. I know Shane will as a performer because his performance is great. The film has production value now.
The film looks beautiful.
Yeah.
Like it's shot beautiful.
It is really, it is a beautiful film to watch. I think the audience reactions we've had have been fantastic. So I'm really hoping the cinemas get to make their money back.
And I just want to touch base a little bit on casting for this one.
Yeah.
Seeing Kim on the big screen. I was a huge fan of his back in the day, Full Frontal days and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
What was your casting process? Because you've got three great names, Aussie actors.
Yeah. Oh, look, I was so looking forward to having great actors on this, because when we did Kenny, we had great actors, but they were all my family.
Yeah.
And I have worked with Kim before. He was in a short film of mine years ago, and I loved working with him.
Yeah.
And he's smart as a whip, and he's just a really, his comic timing is brilliant. But also, he has those beautiful, sad puppy dog eyes. And I wanted a character that could throw the audience's expectations a little bit about who this person is that we spend the first half of the film hearing about so much about. And someone that could really just cut in. I can't tell you how much fun it was. You know, we shot this film in sequence. So the poor crew for the first, you know, 3 weeks, it was just Shane and I, you know. So it was a real buzz when...
How long was your shoot?
5 weeks. So when Kim rocks up, it was, you know, everyone got excited.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and he does a great job. Lynette is just, well, I've grown up watching her. And, you know, I still remember... It's funny, I get these things every now and then. If I see someone I really like on screen, or, you know, I'll see a writer, or I'll meet someone, and I'll think... I have this little twinge, like, we'll get to work with each other one day. And I had that watching The Boys. And and I remember years later thinking, oh, maybe that was just some weird little conniption that went on in my brain. But here we are, we got her. And I'm so thrilled that we got her in this, because she's terrific as the mother. And then, of course, Sarah Snook, you know, Predestination. I thought she was amazing in that film. So, you know, we're very lucky to have the cast. Even the horse was good.
Oh, the horse was great.
And lastly, Freddie's a girl.
Oh, okay. Freddie's,
you
know, a girl.
So Freddie was, you know, playing a role.
And lastly, you're an upgrade.
Oh, yeah.
I saw that a few weeks ago, and I'm interviewing Lee tomorrow morning. And,
oh, great.
And what was your experience like working on that film?
Oh, I loved working on that.
Because it was a great sequence that you were in.
Well, I'll tell you, I'll let you in a little secret. I don't, when I get scripts, I try not to, I will read I will breeze over the whole script once.
Yeah.
Just to get a general feel. And then I will go into the detail of just the scenes I'm in. And then I never read any of the other scenes ever again.
Yeah.
And if I can help it, I won't read the script at all. I'll just read the scenes I'm in. If I'm playing something like a bartender or...
Yeah.
Because, you know, in life, you don't know what experience the person has had before they come into your bar. And I wanted to have that feeling of not knowing who this guy was. So I could literally relate to him as I would see him if he just came into a bar.
Yeah.
Logan, talking about Logan, you know, and it was just, what was lovely about it is I knew it was a one-day shoot for me, so I thought it was a really tiny part. And to my surprise, and this is the great thing about not reading these scripts, is then you basically find out later on, hang on, there only is a handful of actors in the film.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You've actually got a fairly memorable little moment in there. I loved working on it. I love what Lee's done with that film. It's not easy to do anything refreshingly new.
Yeah.
And I think he has got a couple of... I took my son to the premiere last night in Melbourne. And he just said, Dad, that's the best film I've seen all year. He said, I was so getting disappointed because I thought I was going to guess where it was going. And it surprised me. And he said, it's so hard to be surprised these days. And he just loved, as did I, some of the technology he brought into the film. And Melbourne's never looked so
good. Oh, it's so well done.
Good, you know?
I love the Blumhouse model of filmmaking. It's just, they just keep...
Well, in many ways, it's sort of like, it's been fun catching up with Lee because, he was at South by Southwest, so we've kind of been running into each other a lot. And he's just sort of finishing so I said to him last night, any advice on the promo tour? And he said, get plenty of sleep. Drink lots of water.
Well, thanks very much for talking to us.
Thank you
so
much,
Sam. Good luck with the release and the
tour. Thank you.
Cheers,
appreciate it.
All I wanted was a quiet place to come and eat some of Auntie Shirl's ginger fluff cake. I didn't get to the third bite. Wallop. You don't have to be hard up to do bad shit for money.
000 emergency. Are you after police, fire, or an ambulance?
Yeah, Lordy, Lordy, all of them? Lordy, Lordy, prison.